call this meeting of the House Committee on Veterans and Emergency Preparedness to order for Thursday, February 4th. A couple of notes about the agenda and what we're going to do. HJR 202 will be carried over until next week, where there's an amendment being worked on for that bill, and we don't have the amendment. So until we see the amendment and can talk about that, we can't work that bill. And then House Bill 4098 will be moved to the end of the agenda. So we're first going to deal with the HCRs, because we have Representative Springer here to talk about those. So I'm going to open a hearing on HCR 201, 202, 203, 205, and 207. Representative Springer, welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Sherry Springer. I'm State Representative from House District 17. I'm from SIO. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I always hesitate in saying I'm pleased or proud to do this, because I wish nobody was doing this, frankly. But I'm here to talk about HCRs 202, 201, 202, 203, 205, and 207. And this is, as we know, of course, a step in the process for a roadside sign. And somebody, I heard somebody ask one time, when is too many signs enough? When do we have too many signs? And the reference, or the inference, actually, in that comment was, how do we lessen the number of signs? We're getting too many. Okay. I would suggest that the goal there isn't about the signs. It's not about the signs and controlling the number of signs. It's about not having to do things like this. And so I want to talk just briefly about these five individuals. And let me preface my comments with, as you know, these were originally brought. I know they're committee bills, but they were brought by Representative Olson, and he has a family event that he's tending to out of state that is a priority for them. And so I am here to do this. So let me talk just a little bit about HCR 201 and, excuse me, Army Private First Class Anthony T. Justison. And I just want to say a little bit about these men, because we'll be talking about this on the floor, assuming that you will pass these to the floor for a vote. Anthony was born on April 4th, 1988 in Portland, and he graduated from the Oregon National Guard Youth Challenge Program on December 15th, 2005. And he worked for a couple years at Lube Express and wanted to just give more. So he decided that he would join the Army. And he did so on October 8, 2008, and served in the 82nd Airborne Division's 4th Brigade Combat Unit. Unfortunately, he was killed on June 23, 2010, 1 month before his tour in Afghanistan was over. He was killed when insurgents attacked his unit with an explosive device. Private First Class Anthony T. Justison was awarded the Bronze Star Medal and the Purple Heart. He was very close with his family and his comrades, and he had plans for the future with a heart of gold that made his family very proud. And certainly I would urge you to pass this resolution so we, in a more comprehensive and appropriate way, can acknowledge him and his family on the House floor. I also bring to you House Concurrent Resolution 202. And this is about Sergeant Travis Muthart. Excuse me. Travis was born in Corvallis on February 3rd. Yesterday is February 3rd, 1980. Grew up in Brownsville and graduated from Central Lynn High School in 98. And he studied mechanics at Lynn Benton Community College. He enlisted in the Army in 2000. And put his knowledge of mechanics to use while serving in South Korea and in Iraq. He was killed by a roadside bomb on January 27th, 2004. He was passionate about the things he valued the most: his son, his parents and siblings, and his friends. This is a pretty cool part. The Brownsville American Legion Post has been named for Sergeant Muthart, and he is remembered and recognized every year when his family awards the Travis A. Muthart Memorial Scholarship at Central Lynn High School. I remember when this young man was killed a few years ago, and it was devastating. Willamette Valley is a pretty small area. It is, and it just impacts everybody. Next, I'd like to bring House Concurrent Resolution 203, and this is for Chief Warrant Officer Eric Kesterson. Eric was born March 10th in 74 in San Jose, California, and he graduated from Vernonia High School and joined the Marine Corps in 1992. He was a gunny on Hueys and Cobras, served as a UH-1 crew chief, and achieved the rank of staff sergeant in short order. On September 12, 2000, he was a gunner and crew chief on a Huey that went down, and he pulled seven fellow Marines from the burning helicopter before it exploded. He left the Marines in 2001 and worked for a private aviation company in McMinnville. But about 10 months later, September 11th happened, and he volunteered again to serve his country, this time in the Army. He qualified for the Warrant Officer Flight Training Program and became a Black Hawk helicopter pilot for the 101st Airborne Division. He was deployed in Mosul, Iraq, with Company B, 9th Battalion, 101st Aviation Regiment, on November 7, 2003, and killed 8 days later when his helicopter went down, bringing a striker team in support of troops under fire. Among all the honors he received for his faithful service in both the Marines and the Army, he was awarded the Bronze Star, the Purple Heart, and the Air Medal. His family and friends knew he was born to serve. Again, I encourage you to pass this resolution so we can appropriately acknowledge his long-standing service. Next, I'd like to bring you HCR 205 for Specialist Cody James Patterson. Cody James Patterson was born April 12, 1989, in Corvallis, Oregon. He spent his childhood primarily in Philomath and Benton County, where he was also active in the Peace Lutheran Church. He was a civic-minded young man and a captain of his high school football team. Graduated from Philomath in 2007 and went to work while attending Lynn Benton Community College before joining the Army in 2011. He completed the basic airborne course, graduated from Ranger Assessment and Selection Program, and was assigned to Company B, 3rd Battalion, 75th Ranger Regiment, where he served as a rifleman for both of his deployments to Afghanistan. He was killed by an improvised explosive device on October 6, 2016, during combat operations in Kandahar Province in the support of Operation Enduring Freedom. He was promoted to specialist posthumously, and among his awards are the National Defense Service Medal, quite a list here, Afghanistan Campaign Medal with Campaign Star, the Global War on Terrorism Service Medal, the Army Service Ribbon, the Overseas Service Ribbon, the Combat Infantry Badge, the Bronze Star Medal with V Device, the Army Commendation Medal, the Purple Heart, and the NATO Medal. He is remembered for his intelligence, his kindness, his humor, and his humility. Frankly, as I go through these resolutions, I have one more for you today. The vast majority of these, I did not know or meet a single one of these individuals. The vast majority, I remember when they were killed, just because that should hit our radar. That should matter. And I recognize these names. And I guess that's the point of a roadside sign, to remember. So next I'd like to talk about Sergeant Donald R. Walters. Donald Walters was born September 16, 1969, in Colorado Springs. The family moved to Oregon in 81, and he graduated from North Salem High School in 1988. He followed in his father's footsteps when he joined the Army, and he served during the Persian Gulf War guarding Iraqi prisoners. After 1999, he was in and out of the Army for a time, coping with his experiences. But after September 11th, he renewed himself to serve his country once again. He was captured by Iraqi fighters and executed on March 23, 2003. He was awarded the Silver Star and Purple Heart for his heroism in combat. He was known for his work ethic, kind demeanor, and protective nature. He believed deeply in family and freedom. I don't think I have to say a whole lot to get you to agree to these and to support these, but it's important enough to not just assume and to miss an opportunity to talk about... we'd like to talk about the sacrifice, and of course that's acknowledged here. But there was a lot of investment before the sacrifice, the ultimate sacrifice, and that investment was also a sacrifice. And I sincerely encourage you to pass these to a floor with a do pass recommendation. Do approve. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions? Representative Evans, please.
Just more of a comment than a question. First of all, thank you for bringing this forward. Kesterson family in Independence, though he didn't graduate high school there, he spent a lot of time, his family spent a lot of time in Independence. And for folks that tune in and watch these things, it's important to know that his family service actually continued after his passing. The Iraq-Afghan Memorial sitting on the grounds of ODVA is largely the result of their efforts to try and bring people together around that. I think your point about a sign is a relatively inexpensive but important symbolic statement we as a state can and should make. So thank you for bringing these forward.
Anything else?
Sure,
Representative Parrish.
Comment and then a technical question. Thank you. The comment piece is when you look at when these folks were alive and the year they were born. I was born in 74. My siblings born in 89. My nephew, 1980. My nephew born in 89. You look at just how young and how quickly these lives turned off. And I think that that I know the names too, right? I've watched this. It's horrific when you, as somebody who's connected to it, to see those. But then when you see just how young that is. So troublesome, it continues to just eat at me personally. So that's my comment. The technical question I have, and maybe Rep. Springer, you don't know, but are we hoping when we have these to the floor that we are getting families there and that we, are we waiting for Representative Olson to come back, and is there anything we can do to help sort of prep for that
actually,
in his absence?
Thank you for the question, Mr. Chair, Representative Parrish. I am here because Abby and Representative Olson's office handed me this thick file.
Okay.
I did two of these in the Rules Committee yesterday for police officers. There have been arrangements as far as carriers and timing and family that has taken place for weeks now, and all of that is in place. He's not here today. I am, and we're going to do our best, and I believe with 100% confidence we're going to stay on that schedule. And families will be the first, are the first consideration in the timing of that. And those details have already been penciled out, carved out in stone in Representative Olson's office.
Anything further? Okay. Thank you, Representative Springer, for doing that.
Thank you. Are you going to be voting on these now?
Yeah, we'll close and have a work session. So is there anybody else in the audience that wishes to testify on any of these? Okay. I'll close the public hearing on all of them, and I will first open a work session on HCR 201. Should I get this right?
Chair Lively, I move that HCR 201 to the floor with it be adopted recommendation.
Okay. Vice Chair Boone moves HCR 201 to the floor with a be adopted recommendation. Is there any discussion? If not, please call the roll.
Aye.
Representative Huffman?
Excused.
Representative Parrish?
Aye.
Representative Peluso?
Aye.
Vice Chair Boone?
Aye.
Vice Chair Escobar?
Aye.
Chair Lively?
Aye. Motion passes, and at this point we'll designate Representative Springer as the carrier. Okay, I will open the work session on HCR 202.
Chair Lively, I move HCR 202 to the floor with the adopted recommendation.
Vice Chair Boone moves HCR 202 to the floor with a be adopted recommendation. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, please call the roll.
Representative Evans?
Aye.
Representative Huffman?
Excused.
Representative Parrish?
Aye.
Representative Caruso?
Aye.
Vice Chair Booth?
Aye.
Vice Chair Escobar?
Aye.
Chair Lightley?
Aye. Motion carries, and Representative Springer again will be the carrier. Open the work session on HCR 203.
Chair Lively, I move HCR 203 to the floor with the be adopted recommendation.
Vice Chair Boone moves HCR 203 to the floor with a be adopted recommendation. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, please call the roll.
Representative Evans?
Aye.
Representative Huffman?
Excused.
Representative Parrish?
Aye.
Representative Caruso?
Aye.
Vice Chair Boone?
Aye.
Vice Chair Escobar?
Aye.
Chair Lively?
Aye. Motion passes. Representative Springer designated as the carrier. Open a work session on HCR 205.
Chair Lively, I move HCR 205 to the floor with the be adopted recommendation.
Vice Chair Boone moves HCR 205 to the floor with a be adopted recommendation. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, please call the roll.
Representative Evans?
Aye.
Representative Huffman?
Excused.
Representative Parrish?
Aye.
Representative
Caruso?
Aye.
Vice Chair Boone?
Aye.
Vice Chair Escobar?
Aye.
Chair Lightley?
Aye. Motion passes. Representative Springer is the carrier. One more. Open the work session for HCR 207.
Chair Lively, I move that HCR 207 to the floor with the be adopted recommendation.
Vice Chair Boone moves HCR 207 to the floor with a be adopted recommendation. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, please call the roll.
Representative Evans?
Aye.
Representative Huffman?
Excused.
Representative Parrish?
Aye.
Representative Caruso?
Aye.
Vice Chair Booth?
Aye.
Vice Chair Escobar?
Aye.
Chair Lightley?
Aye. Motion passes. Representative Evans is to carry this bill.
Yes, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Representative Springer. Okay. Now, we'll go back to House Bill 4098, so I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 4098. We have an amendment that's been submitted to Representative Evans. Would you like to tell us what the amendment is?
Could I actually ask for assistance from Steve, who has been helping put that together?
Sure.
Okay. Steve, you could come on.
Okay. Did you say carry
over
202?
Do you want to? I didn't know if
no, she can go ahead.
Shan had something to
share. I was offering to summarize for the committee, but it's very dry and technical.
Okay. I'm going to defer to Steve.
Okay. Steve, please introduce yourself.
For the record, my name is Steve Anderson, and I'm working with Representative Evans on the bill.
Okay.
All right. Relative to the amendment, the administrator has summarized it in the remarks, and the Add 2 amendment was basically to change ORS 287A.001 to 286A.001 to make it stand with the appropriate laws under the tax codes for Q bonds. The amendments deal with technical issues that tighten up the language in terms of making sure that the tax codes are appropriate for tax-exempt bonds. There's other definitions that talk about maintenance and who the applicant is, and clarifies language as to who can receive the equipment in terms of community governments, local governments, special government bodies, and private organizations, as long as they are 503C nonprofit organizations. And sets requirements that if they are going to use the equipment for purposes outside of their charters, they need to go to the Office of Emergency Management for approval. So I'll leave that there and take questions if there are specific questions on the amendments.
Are there questions regarding this. Do you have anything further to add, Representative Evans?
I'd like to add just that I really appreciate everybody coming together to try to get this done as fast as possible. I know in the session, in the short session, there's concern about rushing too much and not having a solid product, but I think in this particular case, the right people are around the table, and this should be the last hiccup, and I believe at the end of the day, and I think there's going to be a speaker to talk to it, this will serve rural Oregon, especially in ways that will make a fundamental difference in the near term. So thank you for helping get this through.
So, Cheyenne, the amendment is posted or isn't posted?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the amendment was posted immediately, and it is identical to the dash one, except for the corrected
citation. Except for the correction you did.
The only little hitch, if the committee were inclined to move it today, is that the fiscal, which would be a light analysis mm-hmm. due to the subsequent referral, is not yet
ready.
Again, I'm sure it'll be identical to the dash one, which was a light statement. If you wanted to adopt the amendment as a standalone action of the committee and then hold it over to Monday, you could do that. Okay. Or you could do both on Monday. Or you could wait till the, well, we are at the end of your meeting, so.
That's right, we could wait till then.
And I could run down the hall and.
Okay, very good. Thanks a lot. So I have one person who's marked to testify, Mark Lambert.
Lambert.
Like a lab.
It's Park.
Lab with a heart.
That never happens.
He's a good guy.
Okay. We're going with your good guy, but you're going to introduce yourself. Anyway.
Yes, thank you, Chair Lively. For the record, my name is Mark Labhart, and I have the privilege of serving as a Tillamook County Commissioner. I'm currently chair of the commission. I've served for 12 years as Tillamook County Commissioner. I also am here today representing the Association of Oregon Counties. I serve on their legislative committee and the board of directors, and I'm speaking on behalf of support for House Bill 4098. I'm really only going to speak to the need for the funding, not staffing or anything like that. Also want to let you know that I consider myself almost the kind of like the, it's hard to say this, but the kind of the coastal expert on emergency management and emergency preparedness. Tillamook County's had 15 presidentially declared disasters since 1996. We're about to get number 16. OEM has submitted to the governor the request for a presidential declaration for our county and 12 other counties. So we're probably going to get number 16. I also serve on the National FEMA Federal Emergency Management Resilience Plan Committee. I also served on the governor's task force to implement the resilience plan. Of course, you all know what the resilience plan is. It's got a lot of recommendations in it. And this funding that you hopefully will support for these bonds would be key in helping to implement the resilience plan in a way that helps local governments. As you know, local governments are really struggling now, particularly counties. Some counties are on the brink of financial collapse. I'm particularly thinking of Curry County. Finances are difficult to come by, and a lot of emergency preparedness equipment desires that they might have to purchase emergency stands to be on the lower end of the priority list when you're talking about funding jails and funding staff and those kind of things. So I would like to, with your permission, sir, to just go through a brief PowerPoint presentation. And what I want you to get out of this PowerPoint presentation is essentially two things. I'm not talking just about the earthquake and tsunami preparedness. There's a lot of other emergencies that occur in Oregon besides just the impending earthquake and tsunami. I'm going to show you some pictures of some current disasters that we're having right now that don't make the disaster declarations. Coastal erosion is an issue, but when you start thinking about this, you might want to think about forest fires. I also serve, last year I had an opportunity to serve in the command center in Portland to make the hard decisions on moving of critical resources around the states of Oregon and Washington as the state's representative there. So I saw the disasters that occurred in John Day, Canyon Creek. I saw the disasters occurred in Chelan, Washington, and the lives that were lost there. So I speak from some experience in getting this. This is the little town of Nesquin, which is in southern Tillamook County. The only reason I show you this is some current coastal erosion that's happening right now. And so emergency responders have to deal with this, whether it's planning departments, whether it's fire departments, whether it's water departments, sewer. This is a water line, sewer departments, powers, those kind of things. This is some example of this is a little small community of 200 people. It's a community that is administered by a rural fire protection district that doesn't have a lot of money. And in fact, they don't even have a generator to staff their emergency facility there in the event that we have a disaster. So they serve this community. So when we have disasters with waves breaking up or fires or those kind of things, I want to show you, hopefully this works. This is an example that happened in December. I'm going to show you, to see if it works here. I want you, this is a little Hawk Creek. Hopefully it works. If it doesn't, I'm going to be disappointed. It doesn't look like it's going to work. Okay, so it didn't work. Shoot. So what happened was, is this little creek that you, here's the ocean right out here. This was a during the floods that we had in December, the high tide and the waves came up, and they come right up against the little Hawk Creek Cafe, the motel, and this is what's left behind. And there's a bridge. Let me back up just a second here. There's a county bridge that's right in front of this gentleman that's working on this. This bridge holds all the sewer lines, the water lines that go to that community. So when that bridge gets wiped out and it shows the water going over the top of the bridge, you didn't hear about that in any of the flooding disasters, but essentially if that bridge got wiped out, the community would not have access to it. We also lost access to the town of Cape Mears this last during the last event. We had to put in some emergency services, bridges, and those kind of things. Also lost access to the community of Oceanside. Had to put in some emergency services there. This is an example of some more coastal erosion in the Capes. This happened in 1997, so I wanted to tell you that this is an ongoing problem along the Oregon coast. It's not just recent. This happens all the time. Previous Senator Mark Hatfield had a place here, and then there was coastal erosion that happened there. This is the used to be the county road that went to Cape Mears, the community of Cape Mears. It's the emergency access road out of Cape Mears. When the state highway is closed, which it was this year, we had to come in and move a bunch of debris and stuff and create an emergency access road out of this community. This is what's happening to this road. This mountain, this whole area that you see right here, is essentially a large landslide that is moving toward the Pacific Ocean. This is the community of Cape Mears water tower. Serves the entire community. It is moving off of its foundation. This is the road, the picture that you saw right here is the road that was destroyed. We built a road around it, but this whole thing is moving toward the ocean. So, and then, of course, we know about Cascadia. We're right here. We're past the 75% reoccurrence level. We've got a 30% chance of a magnitude 9 earthquake in the next 50 years, and that's according to I forget his name right now. Dr. Goldfinger, that's his information. I think I've shown you this slide before, but it's just to make a point with you about this. Japan before the tsunami, Japan after the tsunami. This could be Seaside, could be Cannon Beach, it could be Rockaway Beach, it could be Brookings, it could be Gold Beach, it could be any community along the Oregon coast. And if that happens on a July 4th weekend, we're in big trouble. So here's what I want to bring a strong point across in regards to emergency management systems and emergency protection measures. We know that the wastewater systems are going to fail. We know that the electrical systems are going to fail. We know that we're going to have liquid fuel system failure in the Portland area. And we know that we're going to have road system failures. Now, if you're an emergency management agency and you're OEM, how are you going to deal with this kind of a disaster? I had the when the Japan quake hit, I went down to the Emergency Management Center at 2 a.m. in the morning. And as I was driving down at 2 a.m. in the morning, because there was going to be a tsunami coming, we knew that it wasn't going to be a big deal. But at 2 a.m. in the morning, there was already a line a block long lined up at the gas station to get gas. The word had already got out. And this was 2 a.m. in the morning. And an earthquake and Tsunami, those gas stations are not going to have any power. Our public works system needs a generator. Our public works system, that's the gas we stored at our public works shop for Tillamook County. If we don't have a generator to be able to provide electricity to pump the gas out, the diesel out, to put in the trucks, to do the road maintenance, to do the road emergency repairs, we're in trouble. I was going to say screwed, but I'm not going to say that. We know that ports are going to be damaged. This was Cannon Beach. You've seen this picture before. But this was the bridge that went across Cannon Beach was right here, and this is what happened. You know, when you talk to the school superintendent in Seaside, he will tell you that he's in big trouble. All three of his school districts are going to be impacted by this, and he can't get a bond pass. He tried to get a bond pass, and it didn't happen. So, this is what's going to happen. This is what's going to happen to our community. This is the estimates. Their best guesses at best. It's going to affect 98,000 square miles of our beautiful state. It's going to affect a lot of coastline. It's going to affect over 3 million people. We're going to have a lot of buildings damaged, short-term sheltering requirements, mass feeding operations. It's estimated there's going to be a significant amount of deaths, a lot of injuries. We're going to have troubles with our hospitals. We're going to have a lot of debris to work with. OEM is working very diligently on setting up plans through the resilience plan. You know, everything's going to go to Redmond. It's going to get distributed to the rest of the state. We're doing adequate planning, but you've got small communities that don't have access to emergency preparedness equipment, and they don't have the ability to afford any of these kinds of equipment. So this bill would help tremendously in helping to that happen. Okay, so I made my point. We know it's going to be bad. We know coastal erosion is happening. We know there's currently problems. We know there's tsunami is going to be a disaster of all disasters. We know there's going to be a disaster after the disaster. We know we're going to be on our own for a while. So what are we doing about that? Of course, the resilience plan. We all need to work together at local government level and the state to help implement the resilience plan. I want to thank you for your support in getting the governor's resilience policy officer. That's a huge step in the right direction. It clearly says that the state cares and that the state wants a person at the highest level in government to help implement this resilience plan and help make it happen. So appreciate your support for that. These are just two of the communities in my county that are going to be affected by the tsunami. This is a tsunami inundation zone. So we're doing land use planning right now. We're stepping up to the plate. Our county is so far the only county in the state that's now implemented rules and regulations that tell you where you can and can't build inside the tsunami inundation zone. So we've developed sister county relationships. We have a sister county relationship with Umatilla County right now. That's part of this resilience plan. That is a relationship where if we have a disaster, it doesn't matter whether it's a tsunami, earthquake, floods, wind storms, whatever. We can call up Umatilla County, and they will come down to assist us. They have access to helicopters in Umatilla County that they can get to us because our road systems are going to be damaged. But if we have to work 24 hours a day for several days a week, we're going to get burned out. So we've developed these relationships with Umatilla County. This is the rest of the counties that are currently in the process of developing sister county relationships so that we can help each other. We can have mutual aid with each other. The Department of Land Conservation and Development is looking at our template for Tillamook County and looking at land use regulations so we can talk about where we build and not build in these tsunami inundation areas. I'm just going to quickly go through that just to show you that there's a lot of things going on. The Emergency Volunteer Corps of Nehalem Bay, Representative Boone, Vice Chair Boone, is very familiar with this group. They are an outstanding group of volunteers that stepped up to the plate to provide all kinds of work. They're and James Roddy, who used to work for the Department of Geology and Mineral Industries, and his quote, Emergency Volunteer Corps of Nehalem Bay is a deeply committed corps of like-minded volunteers that affords a remarkable private-public coalition with three small coastal towns. And the organized local emergency management. They pretty much do all of their, they've got emergency containers up on the hillside. How'd they fund that? They funded it through volunteer donations where they have supplies of materials. We need to do that along the entire Oregon coast and have these kinds of emergency preparedness things set up. Supplies of emergency services. So this was a group that came together on their own to do that. We don't have that capacity in a lot of other communities. A lot of communities don't have, I mean, the community of Nesquin, 70% of the people in Nesquin don't live there year-round. They're second homeowners. So they provide their own funding. They partner with others, the locals, the school districts, and others. So passing 4098 would help local governments to continue to implement the state's resilience plan. It would show that the state needs to have be a major player in this and step up to the plate. It would allow local governments an opportunity to acquire much-needed emergency preparedness equipment that we could not otherwise afford, and supplements what some local jurisdictions already have in place. We're not asking you to fund the entire operations. There needs to be some skin in the game from these local jurisdictions. Some have the ability to do that, some don't. Please support House Bill 4098, the end, and maybe in Oregon's case, it's just the beginning.
Thank you. Questions? Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and welcome, Commissioner Laphart. It's always a pleasure to see you. Just so you guys know, this is his swan song. He's going to go into retirement after his term is up. So we're losing a good friend and a very experienced person, and as you could hear, that's just like a little teeny part of his expertise. So thanks, Mark, for everything you've done and for your involvement. I think what really is going to happen is he's going to step up in this sector. So in between visits to grandchildren and cruises. So
thank you.
Thanks for coming today and testifying. And I was wondering if you could make your PowerPoint available, because a couple of your slides.
Yes.
Okay, good. A couple of your slides are really show what can be done, like you said, just from nothing to this. And some of the biggest helps in this, what's going to be our biggest help, is the local community organizations, because there'll be people who know each other, and they will, you know, I don't know if you read through that one slide, 33 medical people now, and these are people, we actually passed some legislation to enable them to be able to serve. They're retired or whatever, but they, in the time of a disaster, they will come forward and provide a lot of help.
Yes, Chair Lively, Representative, that was really critical. What you did was, excuse me, you passed some liability waivers for these retired doctors who have retired. They can come back and assist and not have to worry about potential for liability. So that was huge. And so now we have 33 people that are available to assist in a disaster.
That's big.
And it is a swan song for me. I very much enjoy my job as a county commissioner. Some people say you're crazy, but I actually do enjoy the job. You know, there's nothing better, I shouldn't say this, but there's nothing better than being at local government, because you're close to the people, and right. It's great to be close to the people. But 46 years in public service, it's time for me to move on. So.
Representative Evans?
Yeah, thank you, Chair Lively. I just want to publicly thank the commissioner for coming. Leading up to this week, there have been a number of emails going back and forth, and I know your schedule is very hectic, so thank you for coming. I also wanted to supplement that with something, a message I got as I was handing, or as I was walking in. For somebody who's very much a partner in a lot of things that you've done before. This is from Commissioner Tony Hyde from Columbia County. He wanted to please let Representative Evans know that our local emergency planning committee met on Tuesday and were in unanimous support of House Bill 4089. We fully recognize the need for emergency preparedness equipment is largely unmet in many areas in Oregon. We stand ready to help in any way, much like the citizens are already helping where you're at, to bring this concept to fruition. The point is, local government leaders recognize this is an important issue. They have a history of being involved, and I just appreciate you guys coming forward with support for something that isn't going to be free, but is going to be basically an assistance.
Thank you. Representative Peluso.
Yeah, I just wanted to take a second, and I don't think I've said this to this group, and if I have, you can tell me I have. So I had the opportunity in between sessions to meet with some students, both from Seaside High School, who came up to Gresham to be with Gresham High School. So the leadership within our high schools have their own kind of coalition, their own group, and so our Gresham students had been at the conference, their annual conference, and learned all about Seaside and the issues at Seaside, and again, the challenges to get any funding there have been minimal, if that. But what intrigued me the most about it was that it's getting that age group involved, and understanding and recognizing the need and filling what I think is a huge void between our, luckily, the retirees we have and our full-time working population. So, and it just struck me that, again, these are young teenagers, you know, had to leave Seaside at like 4 a.m. to get to Gresham and ready, you know. I mean, they're taking it all very, very seriously, and that just is one of those things that just gives you hope. And having now had the opportunity to sit on this committee, I have learned far more about emergency preparedness than I ever have. And that, and I was an incident commander on our police units for this. So, but that is just one small slice of the puzzle. And so this is all, this has been very helpful and informative. And again, I just, we really need to support these young people in taking that role as seriously as at least these two schools have. And I, and the part of their goal is to spread that again throughout the state. So just thanks for what you've been doing. And let's hope it's
Chair Lively, Representative Lewis, well said. We do have some other areas. The Neocani High School actually has a CERT group, community emergency response team, where the students are actually getting involved in helping their communities. So if we can just get these kids focused, it's the gray hairs like me, not like anybody else here, but gray hairs like me that need to transfer this information on to other folks. And so we need to make sure that our young people, because we may have this earthquake tomorrow, we may have it in another 50 years from now, and these are the folks that have to step up to the plate, and bringing that attention to them is going to be really important.
And if,
sure, go ahead.
I just, one piece of this that I forgot that was so empowering in their presentation they gave, the Seaside High School students, they had real time running on the corner of the screen while they were doing the presentation, and they had a group of students that were walking the emergency route to get out, the evacuation route. They were about a quarter of the way when the assembly was over. And so, and what they talked about was, and again, it just was really impactful for me. They talked about they were young, they were healthy, they all could walk. These were none of our aging population, none of the handicapped, none of, you know, the disabled. Just very, very powerful. And so I just wanted to remember. I just, being of my age, I just remembered that. So, okay.
Can I just one more? And I just maybe just to get it on the record, Commissioner, maybe when you are retired and you can meet with our new resilience officer who's just come on board and help him assimilate what's happening out there so he's not so overwhelmed, because you've got a great story to tell. Tillamook County has really, really taken the lead on this and served as a model and example for up and down the coast. A lot of communities and in the rest of the state too, and it's made me really proud to have been part of the effort, and also a little relieved that more and more people are stepping up, and I don't feel like it's all on me anymore, so that's good. But I expect you all to be part of this in your own way.
So, Chair Lively, Representative Boob, I hope to meet with him. I have until December, so I hope to meet with him
hopefully
well before that. And talk to him.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, this brings, you know, the more we learn, the more we find out what we, the more we need to do. Mm-hmm. I guess that's what I'd say. The more we learn, the more we find out we need to do. This brings up, and I brought up a paper last time of an outline of people helping themselves. Mm-hmm. We should prepare the population to help themselves to be prepared for some kind of a readiness, which we've not done, at least in my area, not real well. But, you know, if you look at the magnitude, you're talking about 3.4 million people. That's overwhelming.
Chair Levy, Representative Esquivel, that is an extremely important point. You have to take responsibility for yourself first. You cannot just say, well, the government's going to be there for me, because the government is not going to be there for you. We don't have enough emergency responders to help everybody in a disaster like this. So you have to take the responsibility on yourself to say, I need to have a 72-hour kit. You're actually going to need more than that. I need to have responsibility for how am I going to let my children know where I'm at, how am I going to, do I have enough food to last? Do I have enough water? Those kind of things. It's all on yourself, because you're going to, in the case of the coast, and this thing's going to go clear into Willamette Valley, we're going to be on our own for quite a while. The government's going to come, but it's going to take a while. And so,
follow up, Mr. Chair.
Certainly.
Yes, in my area, which I'm quite a ways inland, in Medford, they said we could be cut off from 30 days to as much as 9 months.
Hopefully the pear crop's ripe, sir.
Yeah. Hopefully we can get irrigation to the pear crop so we can have it.
We're moving in with you.
That's right. Representative Parrish.
So, you know, the preparedness piece is interesting, and I want to share just anecdotally a story real fast. So I've got a sophomore in high school, and he's in geology class this year. And he came home after the first day of this quarter in his new geology class and said that part of his homework assignment for any extra credit, and this is my kid who does not usually get his homework in very well, but his, if he wanted to earn extra credit for the, to keep his grade up, that every kid was offered if they would go home and figure out how prepared they are for an earthquake and come back and report it and try to motivate their parents to get those kits built, and then they had the semester to come back and actually, you know, get us moving as moms and dads, they would get a 10% extra credit points for doing that. I don't know if the teacher just came up with that on our own or if our geology, you know, science teachers are doing that in our high schools, but I thought that's a really darn good way.
That's great.
I'll help my kid get some extra credit and go to the store and buy some bottled water and throw it in the basement. So anyway, maybe there is an opportunity for some partnership with
Chair Lively,
K-12.
Did you respond?
I said, well, first of all, our garage looks like Costco, and so okay. I think we're good there, but, you know, maybe we probably need to bone up on the bottled water. But he came home with like a little list of things that, you know, and checking it off, and he had to actually do a little report on how prepared is your family for this crisis. And I just think, well, maybe that's, I don't, like I said, I think it's probably random one-off teacher coming up with something interesting, but maybe that's something for us to ask ODE to do.
Do you have your generator so that your freezer doesn't go bad?
Don't have a generator.
No, okay.
No, I'm not. He has all semester to prepare me, so.
So a couple, again, thank you so much for coming. One, a couple things that I, in your presentation, that I think we have to keep reinforcing. One, the fact that emergencies are happening all the time. So when you think about what this bill is trying to address, you know, some people might think, well, so we don't need the equipment now, we need it later. But that's a great point. And I appreciate you making that. And we need to keep reinforcing that point, because that's why we need the equipment now and going on. And the second thing, of course, is you so show so well, a picture tells a thousand words. Some of those, I mean, those are real things happening every day on the Oregon coast especially. Mm-hmm. So I appreciate that. That's just part of how we get this message out and get people to get on the same page, is to understand we're not just talking about the earthquake. We're talking about stuff that's already going on, and the communities don't have all the tools they need to respond.
Yes, and Chair Lively, I'd just like to say, you know, my brother is a county commissioner in Grant County. When the fire came down Canyon City, that little fire department, that sheriff's department was overwhelmed, and they needed emergency preparedness equipment. When I talked to him later that afternoon, he said it was absolute chaos, because the sheriff couldn't get to everybody, and people were evacuating, people were jumping into ponds, they were opening gates, letting things out. The radio systems didn't work very well to contact people. That's emergency preparedness equipment. The where did the people have to go? The shelters weren't set up properly. He said we weren't prepared at all. So we're not just talking earthquakes. So
why did it take us talking about the earthquake to realize we were already having emergencies that we weren't prepared for? That's right. Thank you very much, Commissioner, for taking the time. Anything else on House Bill 4098? Oh, excuse me, sir.
Thank you, Chair Lively. For the record, Bill Clute, Carpenters Industrial Council. Very good presentation, very good. We can never be prepared enough. I have members, North Coast, South Coast, families. You know, one thing we got to look at, too, also is there's very few highways from going east and west. If something bad happens, we're going to lose 101. I think we have to be prepared. We've got to have the airplanes ready, helicopters ready, because that's all we'll be able to use. It doesn't take a natural disaster, if I may. Nothing against the highway department, but they've had their problems this year. They did a repair job on Highway 22. Replaced the culvert. It washed out in the first rain, closed the whole highway. A truck went in it. Again, I'm not faulting them, but I think their engineering people got to realize that that is coastal mountain range. Another highway, they widened it out, took some of the hillside off. The first rain, the whole hillside came down. That highway was closed. Those are major arteries to the coast. Again, I'm not faulting the Department of Transportation, but I think they really got to evaluate when they do these repair jobs that they're going to last. Thank you.
Thank you, Bill. Anybody else wishing to testify on House Bill 4098? Not? I'll close the public hearing. So we do have the fiscal and revenue light. So we can go ahead and take action if this is what people wants to do.
Yeah.
Okay. I'll open the work session. So the first. So the first action you need to is to. Yeah. To
so pass the dash. That's what I wanted to say. Mr. Chair, I move to adopt the Dash 2 amendments dated February 3rd, 2016.
Vice Chair Boone moves that we adopt the Dash 2 amendments dated February 3rd, 2016 to House Bill 4098. Any discussion about adopting the amendments? If not, no discussion, no. Everybody agrees, it's okay. They're adopted.
Chair Lively, I move House Bill 4098 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that it be referred to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference.
Vice Chair Boone moves House Bill 4098 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that it be referred to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference. Any discussion of that motion? Hearing none, please call the roll.
Representative Evans?
Aye.
Representative Huffman?
Aye.
Representative Parrish?
Aye.
Representative Peluso?
Aye.
Vice Chair Boone?
Aye.
Vice Chair Esquivel?
Aye.
Chair Lively?
Aye. Motion passes. So now if we could, I'd entertain a motion to suspend the rules so Representative Huffman could vote on the HCRs that we voted on earlier. Okay.
So I was going to make that motion.
Oh, she was going to make that.
Okay, well, I'll defer to Vice Chair Boone then, because I don't want to get in trouble.
Chair Lively, I move to allow Representative Slacker Hoffman, who wasn't here.
He was working.
You sure you want me to do it, John?
So Representative Boone moves we suspend the rules to allow Representative Hoffman to vote on the HCRs that we approved prior. Any objection to that motion?
They don't get in a fight.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Vice Chair. The Senate Veterans Committee was talkative today, and I even had to call a friend, Mitch Sparks, happened to be in the hearing room and came to my rescue with terminology, and we bailed it out. But
we're glad you were there.
Faked your way through it, John.
Well, Chair Boquist said, "Wow, that was a great job of dancing around what I asked." I said, "Well, thank you. I rehearsed last night."
So from a process, do I have to open the work sessions? I can just ask how he votes on each one or what?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, as long as the intent is clear that he's going to vote, if you name them one at a time, he can vote one at a time or indicate if he's in the negative on any of them, whichever you want.
Okay, that's right. HCR 201, Representative Huffman?
Aye.
HCR 202?
Aye.
HCR 203?
Aye.
HCR 205?
Aye.
And HCR 207?
Aye.
Representative Huffman voted aye on all. Thank you.
Thank you.
Any further business? Representative Evans.
Mr. Chair, just one quick note. In the back of the room is Lieutenant Silas Hessler. He's a veteran of Iraq and Afghanistan, and he is, provided House Joint Resolution 202 is moving through the building, he's going to be helping out on some of that. He's basically the face of the new generation that's coming back. He's currently going to law school, and he's volunteered some time to help shepherd this through. He's one of the future leaders of the Oregon National Guard, and I'm just grateful for him to be here helping.
Yeah. Welcome. Thank you very much. Anything else? Okay, if not, we're adjourned. If not, we're adjourned.